This is PCJ Radio.
Hello, friends and neighbors. A hearty welcome. This is Bob Tarman speaking to you from the Emmental. Believe it or not, we're at Bob Zanotti's place, and he's the guy right next to me.
Holding the microphone. Welcome back to the Emmental, Bob. It's been a while since you've been here. You've come very frequently during the decades, the 32 years as we speak that we've lived here. And this isn't the first time you've come up to talk to a special guest here we have in our home in the Emmental here, the headquarters of Switzerland in Sound, on a beautiful day in August as we're recording this. It's not too hot. It's pleasantly cool. A little bit of a breeze blowing here at 2,500 feet, 750 meters. And right next to me, we spoke of a special guest. He is also not a stranger to this house, but we haven't seen him for a long time, at least here in our home in the Emmental, and that is Jeff White, who is a guy we've known for decades. We'll get into that story in just a moment, Jeff, and we'll reminisce and shoot the breeze a little bit as we've done years ago, Bob, but I want to bring everybody up to date because Jeff is in Switzerland because he was the organizer of, as we speak anyway, the latest meeting of the HFCC. That is the High Frequency Coordinating Committee. Jeff is also the president of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters in the United States. And last but not least, Jeff is the owner and operator of shortwave station WRMI, Radio Miami International, broadcasting with 50 kilowatts to the Caribbean and Latin America, and using also an Orban OptiMod audio processor that I was able to arrange for them, but that's another story. Jeff, welcome back to our home in the Emmental. Good to see you.
Well, it's great to be here, Bob, because I think it's been about 20 years since we've been here. It's been too long. I can tell you now, sitting here in the mountains and looking at the cows and the horses and the beautiful scenery here and the beautiful weather, it's been far too long. So we're pleased to be here again.
Well, we did see each other in Lugano for the EDXC in 07, there, November 07. Just unfortunately, two days before my dear friend Dick Dawson died. I'll never forget that. But this is the first time you've been up here at the house for all that time. Bob, when did you meet Jeff for the first time? Do you remember?
I asked Jeff just about half an hour ago. He suggested Barcelona at the DXCC meeting, which I wasn't there.
What year was that?
I think, Bob, that it might have been the first time I came to Europe was 1981. Remember when Swiss Radio International hosted the EDXC conference, European DX Council conference here, and I'm sure you were there.
Bob.
Oh, yes, in 89.
81,
that's a lifetime. Well, that's right, I recall the meeting there. Now, for a lot of us, and a lot of us hams, shortwave is on a decline, is on a way down. How does it look broadcasting-wise on shortwave?
We have to mention HFCC stands for High Frequency Coordinating Committee, and you can maybe, in your answer, Jeff, explain what that group is and its reason for existence.
Well, it started about 1989 with the fall of the Berlin Wall, the end of the Cold War, when the impetus actually came from the Czech Republic, from the frequency manager at Radio Prague, Ulrich Chip, who founded the HFCC, but he wanted to get together the Western and the Eastern countries, and it started in Europe, but now it has become, the membership has become worldwide, basically, including the Arab States Broadcasting Union, which sort of merged with these conferences that are held twice each year now to plan or coordinate HF frequency usage by the broadcasting stations for the following frequency period.
Well, let me just jump in a moment, Jeff, and say for those who are unaware that HF is the technical term for shortwave broadcasting. High-frequency broadcasting is the technical designation according to the International Telecommunication Union.
That's right. And there are two seasons a year for shortwave frequency planning, the so-called summer and winter seasons. And a few weeks before each season begins, all of these countries get together and have a big conference. They get together in a big room and coordinate their frequency usage. The idea being that no two stations should be on the same frequency at the same time.
That's not a good idea.
To the same target area, at least. And so are able to avoid collisions, as they call them, before they happen. And if there are, they all put together in they're all together in one room, and they have a big database, a big technical system for sending the frequency schedules to a master database and then back out to all the other stations or administrations. Some of them who attend are telecommunications administrations. And they see what the potential collisions are. And if two stations intend to be using the same frequency at the same time or sometimes adjacent frequencies, anything that could cause potential interference, then what they do is they literally walk from one table to another and negotiate a solution. And the solution may be for one station to change a frequency. Usually the one that's been using it the longest time has priority. The solution may be one station lowering its power or altering the antenna beam. Or something like that.
It's a real technical meeting, then.
It's a technical meeting. It's kind of a miniature United Nations because you have the technical people, the frequency planners from all sorts of stations. You have the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and the South Africans and the Americans, of course, and just about everybody in the world. And they all get along quite well. They all know each other because they meet twice a year together, and there's about 110, 120 of them or so, 130 maybe, that get together. And since they know each other and they deal with each other regularly, they're able to come up with solutions and cooperate and solve these problems before they happen.
And I think formally and in the end, the ITU gives its stamp of approval, the administrations, because it's a governmental organization. Formally, the HFCC gives its proposals to the respective government administrations, and then they go to the ITU. Frequency conflicts and QRM, as we say, you know, interference, that used to be a real headache, especially during the Cold War, because nobody was talking to anybody. They were just fighting it out on the airwaves. And it certainly, if you tune around the bands today, the situation is a lot cleaner than it was years ago.
Those were the days, Bob. And we were trying to fight the intruders as well as, you had stations on frequencies. And when SRI went down and closed down, immediately we had other stations using the same frequencies and so on and so forth. But I have two questions, actually, Jeff. First of all, 50 kilowatts. What is the mode?
That's WRMI, the station in Miami.
Yes, just standard good old AM modulation. No digital for us yet.
Okay, that takes us, of course, an old subject we had at SRI in our program. Have you ever considered in swapping to single sapping?
You know, I don't know if our transmitter is capable of running single sideband, to tell you the truth, but no, we really haven't. It might be an interesting thing to consider sometime, but now, you know, everybody's talking about DRM, you know, Digital Radio Mondiale, and moving into the digital era, and that is also hard for us because we have an old transmitter from the 1970s, which we bought from Radio Clarín in the Dominican Republic, and is sort of refurbished, and I understand that it's not all that easy to convert this particular transmitter to DRM. Whether he could operate an SSB, I honestly don't know. But for the meantime, anyway, we're stuck with the good old standard AM shortwave modulation, I think.
Well, this is a very passionate issue with you, Bob. It has been for years.
That's true. But to tell you just in one word, single side bandwidth, of course, improved the efficiency. It would reduce the bandwidth, and especially in cases of QRM, a neighboring, you know as well as I do what the advantages would be. But the transmitter as itself must be designed to handle single sideband. There's no doubt about that.
Or else it blows up. Especially using the audio processing equipment you've got, that Orban OptiMod with heavy clipping. I can tell you as a user of it on my ham radio station, I recovered the unit from Schwarzenberg when it closed down in 1998. I was able to get it, and I tell you, it really puts the equipment through its paces, even though I'm using equipment, including a linear amplifier and a transceiver, which are designed for sideband. Yeah. It really increases the duty cycle there, so you got to be very careful. This is if you're using an old transmitter, that's a legitimate problem.
But I'll tell you, of all the equipment that we've ever bought, I think the best buy that we ever had was that Orban OptiMod processor, because it makes 50 kilowatts sound like 250, you know? I mean, it's a fantastic piece of equipment, and it's...
Yeah, I didn't steer you wrong, Jeff.
No.
And I know a guy in Boston, Dan, WNDAN, he's a broadcast engineer and a ham radio friend of mine. He was the one who asked me, do you know anybody who wants to buy it? I said, I think I've got a customer for you. Now he wishes in private he hadn't sold it. He misses it so much.
Well, he's not getting it back from us.
Jeff, what did you say the frequency was?
9,955 kilohertz in the 31-meter band.
Bob, is your excellent location you have. Have you ever heard the station?
I have, especially in the winter, but not recently, because the beam, it doesn't favor Europe at all, Jeff. If we hear it at all, conditions must be extraordinarily good.
Yeah, we're mostly beaming 160 degrees towards, I think it goes straight through Barranquilla, Colombia, and Buenos Aires, Argentina, if you go straight down 160 degrees from Miami. So it's pretty difficult to pick it up in Europe.
Now, what about the programming, Jeff? I mean, you've had a lot of political programming over the years. You've had a lot of religious programming, I think especially number one of the Cuban exiles beaming to Cuba. The result was you get jammed by the Cubans. The other thing was the religious broadcasters. Is that basically the content of the station these days?
Well, we started out, yes, as brokers before we even had WRMI on the air, but we operated as Radio Miami International, buying airtime on other facilities. And the main clients in the beginning were indeed the Cuban exile organizations in Miami that wanted to broadcast to Cuba. But over the years, we've had a whole variety. I mean, for example, when President Aristide was in exile from Haiti and operating out of the Haitian embassy in Washington, he had 3 hours a day of programming via Radio Miami International transmitting to Haiti. We've had programs to Peru, programs to Argentina, programs to various parts of Latin America. Mostly, you know, on shortwave, it tends to be mostly political and religious, as you know. Not that much commercial, although we are a commercial station, but most of our clients are non-commercial. It is mostly the political and the religious clients, although in the U.S., there are about 20 or 25 so-called commercial or privately owned shortwave stations that are licensed by our Federal Communications Commission. We're one of them. And we're probably one of two or three that operate commercially. The rest of them are pretty much religious organizations that broadcast their own programming. Ours is a little more, has a little more variety. Ours is probably the one that has the most political programming on it. But we have a whole variety of things. We have cultural programs, people who buy airtime to do musical programs of various sorts. It's a whole variety. We sell blocks of airtime, and people buy it to do whatever they want. They can run commercials on it. They can, essentially, as long as they don't break the law, they can do anything they want to with the airtime.
So you're a relay station. You're selling airtime to whoever wants it or who needs it.
Well, yes, and in fact, we've done relays for various stations for many years, and until just recently, because of budgetary problems, we were broadcasting programs in English and Spanish, and for a while in Czech, from Radio Prague. They were using us as a relay to transmit to the Western Hemisphere.
What are the chances you're going to the Internet, Jeff?
Well, they're 100% because we're already on the Internet. Really, for about 4 or 5 years now, we have simulcast everything live on the Internet. If you go to our website, wrmi.net, there's a little thing that says Listen Live, and you click on that, and you can hear all the programming simultaneously on the Internet.
Basically, Jeff, I mean, you know my philosophy. Bob and I have discussed this, and there's hours of our discussions here on Switzerland and Sound about it. But let me repeat briefly here. I think everyone at this table realizes, believes, and subscribes in one particular factor here, and that is the security factor. So many organizations are putting all of their eggs in the Internet basket. And, of course, it's all run by bookkeepers and bureaucrats. And they go, oh, we can save enormous amounts of money by going on the Internet. But, Bob, you're an old hand at this. You know exactly. You've installed HF systems. You've worked for the Swiss government. You know the dangers in investing too heavily in Internet and satellite. But a lot of people today, especially younger people who didn't come through the shortwave era, they say, who needs shortwave? The Internet does it all for us. Bob, how would you answer these people? They're forgetting that the Internet and satellites are very easy to take off the air.
Well, I guess the answer is quite easy. We, the old hands, are the pioneers of shortwaves. And the newcomers, the youngsters, they hardly know what shortwave is because they are accustomed to Internet and Skype and what have you. Nothing against Skype. It's a great thing as long as it works.
Yeah, they turn it on and think it's like water. You know, you just turn it on, and there the water runs.
That's right. I don't know what the future is of our shortwave policy. Jeff still believes in it,
and that makes three of us here at the table.
And When we listen to that station, what would we expect? 50% music, musical program interspersed with political comments and that sort of thing. But I mentioned Internet for us, which we are hardly capable of listening the 9 meg broadcast from Miami. So I think it would be good for those interested to tune to the Internet and see what's going on.
Well, Bob, this is a valid point. And I mean, we have to just as quickly make the point. We are nobody here. Not one of us at this table is against the Internet. We're not against the use of satellites for sound broadcasting. But what we are saying is, and I've been reading a lot of stuff about this. What, for example? Oh, that's my daughter Diana's dog. The yellow Labrador Silver. I don't know what he's barking at. This is live radio, friends. But what people forget about, and the BBC knows it, the VOA knows it, because they've been direct victims of it. If somebody doesn't like you on the Internet, they literally pull the plug. If somebody sits there at a control panel and just pushes a button and you're gone, or they pull the patch cord out. If they don't like your satellite transmissions, they kill the satellite or jam it. Now, people don't think about that because since the end of the Cold War, in my opinion, and I don't want to prompt your agreement, but I have a feeling you both will agree with basically what I'm saying, we have been lulled into a false sense of security. We take the Internet for granted. We take satellites for granted. And we don't think about this anymore. But the Internet runs on satellite. It runs on computers. It runs on all kinds of international connections, which are supervised by so-called gatekeepers. There's no security. If they don't like you, they take you off. They take you out. That's it. But the one thing that will always get through is a shortwave signal. And fortunately, their idea is not broadcasting, but the military knows this. The military, I'm told, is holding on all over the world to HF facilities because they know in a pinch that's the only way they're going to get their signal through, Bob.
Yeah, you're right to a point. But shortwave, of course, is so much dependent upon radio propagation conditions, the sunspots, and so on and so forth. And you know, as well as I do, Bob, the sunspot has let us down for quite a number of years. I don't know what's going to be the end of it here. Will the good radio propagation conditions come back? And this is one of the shortcomings of shortwave.
But they're still getting through, Bob. Those big powerhouses, those 250 kWs, those 500 kWs are getting through. I mean, Jeff, you're running 50 kilowatts, which by shortwave standards is relatively small power. But you're getting through, aren't you?
Well, let me give you an example. When the earthquake occurred in Haiti earlier in this year, 2010, we started doing a one-hour daily broadcast, especially for Haiti. And we had programs from United Nations Radio in French and Creole, from other programmers, and even some religious programs in Creole. And we were hoping that this was getting through well to Haiti. We know we have a pretty good signal in Haiti from monitoring in the past, but we had some radios made up. There's an organization in Canada called Galcom that makes fixed-tuned radios, and they'll make them, they're solar-powered, and they pick up one frequency, and in this case, 9955 kilohertz.
A propagandist dream.
Well, we had a pastor, a Haitian pastor, who traveled down to Haiti just after the earthquake, and I gave him a box of these radios to take down there and hand out to people. And he came back and he said, these people were so happy because he said everybody lost their radios in the earthquake, first of all. They didn't have any radios. And he says, we turned these things on, and we could hear your signal loud and clear morning, noon, and night all day long. So, you know, shortwave can still get through at the right circumstances, the right paths, and so on. So we were real happy about that.
Did you say it was solar powered?
Yes, they have a solar panel on them. They're about the size of a pack of cigarettes, a little bigger. And there's a little solar panel on them that charges up from the sun or from lights, any light source. And they have two rechargeable, I think they're NiCad batteries, that last years and years. And so people don't have to have batteries, which are very expensive or non-existent in a lot of these countries. We sent them into Cuba as well. And they power them just with the solar cell.
Wasn't somebody doing this years ago? I seem to recall a religious broadcasting organization that was passing out these radios free. Who was that? It wasn't HCJB, was it? Was it HCJB? You're nodding yes.
HCJB, Transworld Radio, all of the big religious broadcasters have used these radios, and almost all of them are made by this one company in Canada called Galcom in Hamilton, Ontario, not too far from Toronto. And in fact, they hosted our annual meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters this year, 2010, and we got to tour the factory there and see how they make these things. Very interesting.
Well, Jeff, you just brought it up, the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters. It's mainly an American organization. I suppose theoretically you'd be open to Canadians as well or anyone else in North America. Mexico's North America. I don't know how that works politically and economically there. But who is the membership basically, and what are your aims and main activities?
Well, it was formed, again, sometime around 1989, like the HFCC, but entirely independently, of the privately owned broadcasters in the U.S. As I mentioned, there are about 20 or 25. As sort of a trade organization to represent these stations before the FCC and to...
That's the American Federal Communications Commission, the licensing agency.
Mm-hmm, to represent our common interests. And it's expanded since then to other things of interest to shortwave broadcasters in general, not just regulatory. But members, we have voting members, can be any... shortwave station in the U.S. licensed by the FCC. However, we have associate members, which can be any station or organization anywhere around the world. We have, for example, Télédiffusion de France is an associate member, VT Communications out of the UK. We have a few others in Europe and elsewhere in Canada. HCJB, of course, which is, doesn't have a shortwave station in the U.S., but is interested in shortwave broadcasting, and they're headquartered in the U.S. So we have the voting members and the associate members.
And I guess one of the things that you should be doing anyway, if you'll allow me the comment, is promoting shortwave and to convince people, decision makers, and time buyers that there is a future in shortwave. But let me ask you bluntly the question, and I know I don't want to borrow from the German expression, I don't want you cutting into your own flesh here, but I mean, honestly, I mean, you're in the business. You talk, you've got colleagues that, who are in this now. And we know that in terms of national broadcasting services on shortwave or HF, times are poor, they're bad, SRI is gone, so many of them are closing, curtailing, Radio Sweden is going down the drain, and on down the list. It seems pretty demoralizing. I'm sorry to use those words, but can you offer any ray of hope and optimism there? Jeff, do you see a brighter side to all of this?
Well, of course, there are those who think that DRM will be the future of shortwave, digital, that it could change everything, high-quality shortwave. It all depends.
That's digital modulation, yeah. FM quality on shortwave.
That's right.
Crystal clear.
Yep. The only problem is there are no or very few consumer-grade and consumer-priced accessible receivers on the market yet in most of the world. So it's dependent on some of the manufacturers getting involved in producing these, mass producing these receivers. If that happens, then I think DRM could have a great future and could be the sort of salvation of shortwave. But even if it doesn't, I mean, there are so many millions or hundreds of millions of these analog shortwave receivers out there in the world. And yes, a lot of the government broadcasters are cutting back and eliminating services and so on. But in a way, you know, some of us feel that it kind of leaves the bands a little less crowded and maybe a bigger audience for those of us who still remain on shortwaves.
Maybe more quality rather than quantity. Bob, you know, this touches a sore nerve with me, I think with you as well. I've written about it. In fact, I'm thinking of publishing the paper here on the website one of these days. Years ago, I wrote a paper, an essay entitled The Future of Shortwave Broadcasting. I wrote it about 15 years ago. Nothing has changed. And one of the things that has not changed is this old nonsense about cost effectiveness. Now, as my good friend Keith Perron of the Happy Station would say, and there goes the phone in the background, but it doesn't matter. We're not here. We can't take it right now. We're alone. But he would say these ideas are put together by bean counters and bureaucrats, you know, sitting there with their abacus, you know, figuring what the things cost. And they say it's not cost effective. They tell you that HF broadcasting costs so much money to operate the transmitters and all of this and that and the other thing. But, you know, Jeff, you've just made the point. There are so many, Bob, there are so many millions of shortwave radios out there. They are in people's hands. They are cheap. They are simple to operate. Everybody has one. They know how to use them. And I believe a lot of people in the world are looking around for stations to listen to. And if you look at it from that point of view, shortwave is the most cost-effective because there are more people who have the ability to hear it than even the internet, I would say, today.
Well, and as you guys know, every additional listener to your internet stream means you need more bandwidth, and that costs money. Whereas with shortwave, you know, for the same cost, you can have any number of listeners. You're unlimited.
Bob, you remember Roy Oppenheim. He was a really a great guy. I got along with him extremely well. He was, I'm sorry to say, for too brief a time, the director of Swiss Radio International. I'll stick my neck out here and editorialize, and I'll make this bold comment. I believe that if Roy had stayed on the job, SRI might still be on the air today. And I say that very sincerely and with great conviction. But he seemed to have it pretty well under control. He understood. He told me more than once, and you and I talked to him as well. I think he told you the same thing. Shortwave is going to be around for a long time. It's good to get a foothold in the new technology. It's good to have a presence on the internet. Good to have rebroadcasting on local stations. It's good to have satellite available and everything else. But shortwave will be the backbone of international communications for a long time.
Yes and no, Bob, because in the meantime, with the marching on technology, we have had so many additional new media to come, and I'm somewhat afraid that we seem to be spoiled or saturated by all the mass of information and music that come on to us, that people are just, I don't know, Bob, I don't even, that's my personal thing, I rarely hear to the local FM station because I'm glad that I have some peace and quiet and I don't need to do so, but we may see a revival of nostalgia in a certain way to include short waves as well. I wish it would be that time. But another question now to to you, Jeff. Could you disclose some of the highlights of that HFCC conference of yours?
There was also a lot of talk in general about the future of shortwave, because a lot of these stations, a lot of the frequency planners from these stations are afraid of what's happening. They've seen what's happened at other stations, and they know it could happen to them too, that with the budget cuts and so on, and people buying into this myth of shortwave being a dying medium.
Thank you for that word, myth. Yeah.
that they really need to convince their own administrations that continuing to broadcast on shortwave is worthwhile. So there was a lot of discussion at this particular meeting here in Switzerland about the importance of the HFCC be getting into more of a, instead of just doing frequency coordination, of doing more promotion of shortwave in general.
That's what I was driving at before, yeah.
Exactly, and promoting shortwave among the shortwave stations, among the management of these stations, so that they know how important it is that they continue broadcasting on shortwave. So that is one of the big things that we're going to be doing now in the coming months and years at HFCC. And obviously it's in our own interest, and it's trying to promote the survival of our stations, but it's also in the interest of shortwave listeners. And who else is going to do it? If an organization like the HFCC doesn't do it, we see that, I mean, nobody else is going to do it for us, so we've got to make some really bold moves now.
It's ironic, Jeff, that I sincerely believe that the audience potential is there. You don't have to convince the audience, that's preaching to the choir. But ironically, you've got to preach to the bureaucrats and the managers to tell them that there's a future in shortwave. Bob?
Has the missing sunspots been a subject? Because it's vital whether you hear the station or not.
Yeah, I think everybody's very interested in it and worried about it. What can we do about it? It's one of those sorts of things that we just have to kind of live with until things start going up again. But we know that eventually they have to. and it's just kind of unfortunate that the lower sunspot, lower end of the sunspot cycle occurs at a time when so many stations are struggling to maintain their shortwave services. That is unfortunate. But
the bureaucrats will come and say, see, look, it's not even reliable. You can't even be sure if the signal is going to be there. You have to admit, I don't like to admit it, but it is a point, isn't it?
Well, there are a lot of factors working against us, you know. But again, we're the ones that have to do this, and it's worthwhile, we think, to do what we can to promote the continuation of shortwave, and hopefully the sunspot cycle will start going up again in the not too distant future.
A word about that in a moment, but I have this personal observation I'd like to make, and my conviction about shortwave and its potential. and it's not nostalgia. I believe it's still viable, it's still alive, but it comes from personal experience. I'll give you a very simple scenario that happens to me, and it happens to numerous people. I talk on ham radio about it. In fact, Bob, you know as well as I do, hardly a week goes by on ham radio that I don't call CQ, and somebody, very often from the UK, will come back saying, "Wait a minute, your voice is from, aren't you one of the two Bobs?" And we talk about this. And, you know, everybody, so many people come up with exactly the same story. You go on vacation. Everybody goes on vacation somewhere. You go to the beach, you go to the mountains, you go to the desert, I don't know where. But you don't take, most people don't have the internet to take with them. They're doing it now over cell phones. But who's going to sit there for hours listening to radio on the cell phone? And who's going to pay the bill? And nobody, you know, very few people can or want to take a satellite dish with them. You can't go and put it in your back pocket and camp and hike. Or you, what are you going to do lying on the beach? So you reach for the shortwave radio. That used to be wonderful in the old days. Otherwise, you're cut off from news. And in the last few years, Swiss Radio International is dead and buried. The BBC has cut back. The VOA has cut back. There are only Radio Nederland, and now it's Radio Netherlands Worldwide, they called it. I think they're practically only Dutch these days on shortwave. The only ones that are still hanging on, basically, are the French, the Spaniards, and the Germans. Now, fortunately, I speak German. I understand German. So if I want to hear the news, okay, in Italy I speak Italian too. I can get the news from the Italian service. But if I want to hear a different perspective, if I want to hear the world news, I mean, I pick up the shortwave radio and I listen to the Deutsche Welle, or I used to listen to Swiss Radio International, or I listen to Radio France International. And this is where people turn for news when they're away from home. You can throw a small pocket-sized shortwave radio into a suitcase or into a carry-on on a plane, and you can listen to the world. But how can you do this without shortwave? I mean, I keep harping at this, and I'm getting up on a soapbox here. I'm in orator's corner and in speaker's corner in Hyde Park. But that's the way I feel. And I get very upset at the lack of foresight, the lack of vision and imagination among these planners. All they see is a dollar sign in front of their faces. They don't think of anything else.
And don't forget the Chinese among the stations that are continuing to believe in shortwave. More and more frequencies, more and more relay stations all over the world. I mean, they realize the value of shortwave, and they're gaining the corner on the propaganda market around the world. Unfortunately, the Western countries are not seeing this potential, but. You know, they know that the radios are out there, and they're continuing to broadcast. I mean, they're in a build-up mode while everyone else is going downward.
That's a great point, Jeff, and I've mentioned this myself a number of times. The Chinese are very shrewd. They're very smart. They're watching the rest of the world fight it out and killing themselves. And they sit back and wait for everybody to be dead and then move in and take over shortwave. The only thing that's going to be left anymore in the future, if the trend continues, is China Radio International and religious broadcasters. There'll be nothing in between. Bob, I mean, you're looking at me in a very sort of philosophical way. I mean, your comment.
I hope and pray that the good old shortwave may revive to some extent, I don't know, especially in countries where we have a surplus of information and CD and that sort of thing, internet and FM stations and FM 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and so on. You don't really know to what station to listen, so people get fed up and saturated. And I think in build-up areas, this may be one of the reasons that people refrain to go to shortwave, because it's too noisy, it's up and down, and it's old papa's radio and that sort of thing. But in parts of the world, Jeff said it in Haiti, where they have no other means of communication, it's the only means to stay in touch with the world.
But Bob, even in the developed world, in the United States, where we have all freedom of information and expression and everything else, and 150 or 200 cable channels on television, if you want to find out what's going on in the rest of the world, it's really difficult. I mean, we get in Miami at my house, we get CNN and we get MSNBC and some people get Fox News, but you listen to them and there's no international news unless it's something that very specifically affects the United States. We don't even get CNN International, which is not too bad, but CNN Domestic, I mean, there's nothing about the rest of the world. If you want to find out what's going on in Africa or even in Europe, I mean, you've got to have a shortwave radio.
And I remember, because I was involved at this for a while at SRI, I had a mandate from Roy Oppenheim, the man I mentioned before, to do research and market analysis of the market for rebroadcasting. That was considered one of the magic words at the time, the rebroadcasting. Get your signal over there by satellite and rebroadcast it locally on FM. And the one that thought they had everybody in their back pocket was the almighty BBC. But what happened? The BBC got a cold shower, because instead of everybody falling all over themselves to take the BBC, nobody was taking it. And if they did, they picked and chose what they wanted. They decided, in other words, the rebroadcaster decided, we want this, we don't want that, we'll give you 3 minutes and not 15. And the BBC was really taken aback by this. They didn't know that not all the world thought they were so fantastic. And again, the only way you're going to get your message through without any gatekeeper, without any editorial control, is on shortwave. And I'm convinced about this. And, well, I mean, we could go on here forever and ever. Bob, I see that you seem to have become a bit critical, a bit
philosophical,
almost cynical, I would say, that you seem to have lost your optimism a bit about the future of shortwave.
Let's call it the... I try to look at things realistically. And to see the good old days of shortwave come back is kind of wishful dreaming. But if I want, I'm interested in news, say from Radio Australia, since I've been there, I go to the internet and I can hear the live transmission of 2-3 programs from Sydney or from Melbourne, or likewise from London, the BBC 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you name it. Since there is no other means on shortwave to pick up a station from Australia, propagation will just not allow it, you see. So I'm not cynically, I'm not sad, not philosophical about it. But Bob, let's trace what is realistic and what not.
Well, you're a realist in that sense, but and maybe I'm a bit of an idealist, but I'm also an idealist in the sense that, you know, I'm not presenting myself as the great source of all wisdom, but I get annoyed by stupidity and short-sightedness. And I believe that so much stupidity and short-sightedness has been involved in management decisions to kill shortwave. Very few of these managements have had the vision, the foresight, and the courage to keep shortwave. And I'll repeat what I said at the very beginning. I believe we all agree with this. There is nothing wrong with the internet. There is nothing wrong with rebroadcasting. There is absolutely nothing wrong with using satellites to get your message across. We don't even mention television. Television is another form of international broadcasting that's available to us. This is all well and good. But we're talking about the classic case where somebody is on a mountaintop or on a beach or in a place where they don't understand the local language, they can't read the local newspapers, they can't understand the local TV or radio, and they're on a business trip somewhere or on a vacation, and they want to find out what has happened in the world since I've been away. And for these people, the shortwave radio is still, I'm convinced, the best means. And I'll just make one comment about the sunspot situation. We don't know what's going to happen, but now I'm going to wax a little bit esoteric. As we speak, and this is August 2010, as we speak, and we don't know, but I'll go down on record as having said this, there is speculation, there's significant speculation that something strange is going on the sun. It may have happened before, but even serious scientists attributed to NASA and NOAA in the United States and other physicists are saying there could be. It's not a doomsday theory. It could be. It is within the realm of possibility that there could be a sudden, gigantic, and catastrophic eruption on the sun. A gigantic solar flare that could be so powerful that it could even reach the surface of the Earth, cause death, damage, injury, and can take out, destroy, or lame our terrestrial, our current international communications network. They talk about disruptions of power grids. They talk about disruptions that the satellites will go down. Global positioning satellites will go down. The internet satellites will go down. All the stuff we rely on right now. And the only thing that might survive to communicate worldwide, to make worldwide communication possible, it'll go back to my statement about the military before, is HF. And I'm told by people who seem to know, and I've heard a lot of these experts talking, they say that this is one of the reasons why the military is holding on to HF. Because they know when all else fails, when the satellites are gone, when the internet is down, the only thing that they're going to have is HF communication.
Don't forget one thing, Bob. When we are to expect such a terrific burst of all sorts of waves and from the sun, don't forget that when our ionospheric layers are being bombarded with too much solar energy, we will know a phenomenon called as the Dillinger effect, the total blackout.
Right.
So don't forget this. Not only the satellites will go down, but also HF won't be propagated because it's being kept back in the D layer of the ionosphere.
Right, but that would be a temporary situation and would last far less time than the outage of satellites, because those satellites are up there. You're not going to just pull them out of the sky and put a new one up there. The whole thing, they could be burned out, they could be destroyed, they could be totally ruined, these communication systems. And HF might recover after a day or two, after even a Dillinger effect. I mean, the ionosphere will stabilize eventually. But when the satellites are gone, they're gone until you put a new one up there.
Yeah, well, I hope when that happens, we're still on the air on good old shortwave, and maybe we'll start making some money.
I want to give you the last word, Jeff White. You know, you're in this business. You've heard so many people talking. You were just at the HFCC, the High Frequency Coordinating Committee. You know what the insiders, what the people in the industry, in the field are saying. I know you know, I don't want to be indiscreet. I don't want you to be indiscreet. If you have confidentialities, I don't want you to break them. I know you won't do it. But tell us what you can. What are they really saying about the future of shortwave?
Well, you hear the whole spectrum. And, I mean, you've heard part of the spectrum here during this program as well. But, I mean, some people are convinced it's dead or dying, and it maybe has another 3 or 4 years. Others think it has another 2 or 3 decades. Others think it can go on continually, perpetually, and particularly if DRM takes effect. I don't know. Nobody has a crystal ball. I certainly don't. But it's something that's and I think for all of us here, it's something that's in our hearts and in our backgrounds and we've worked in it all of our lives, and it's something we would like to see continue to exist, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that if there's any potential at all left in shortwave, we're gonna make it work. And what'll happen in the end, nobody knows with all of the new technological advances. But our philosophy is, okay, we started internet, and internet is great. And for example, people in Europe who can't hear our signal on shortwave can hear us on the internet. That's fine. But we see it as all of these things as complementary, not as replacing shortwave. And so, for as far as we're concerned, for the foreseeable future, we've got to stay on shortwave, and we hope really everybody else will too.
And I'm thinking of parts of the world. We all know the classic areas. I think of South America, where shortwave is still a very important and powerful medium. And I'm thinking of Africa, where people can barely come up with the next meal, let alone buy an internet connection and broadband and computers and everything else. What about these people? And as far as all the doomsday sayers are concerned, you know, the shortwave is dead, shortwave is dead. Yeah, well, we've heard that before. And I have some theories about it, which I will not go into right now. But I can't help but recall Mark Twain, the great American writer and social critic and satirist, who once wrote to a newspaper saying, "Your recent reports about my death are highly exaggerated." Bob, I guess we could go on here for hours. It was really nice to see you up here again in the Emmental. It's been too long, and you're always a welcome guest. And for those who wonder, this is our latest recording here with our good friend Jeff White. I mean, our acquaintance, by the way. We can talk about that for a moment. We talk on the air, and everybody says, "How's the other Bob? How's Bob Tolman doing?" I said, "Bob is fine."
The beam went down.
Oh, boy, as we speak, you lost your beam antenna, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes. Well, anyway.
Tell us the story of the beam. You can't get away with that. You got to tell us the story. What happened? It was up 40 years and came down. What happened?
So, well, we had a kind of a hurricane.
A high-gain TH3 it was.
Yeah, a TH3. Which stood up for 40 years, but we had such a terrific storm, hurricane force, and it came down. Too bad. So the only thing you can say, also with the outlook and the prospects of shortwave, que será, será.
What will be, will be. Bob, you're gonna put up another one, right?
I'm not sure about. I'll have something in between, perhaps a vertical or something. I don't know yet, Bob.
I got an old vertical. I've got a high gain 14 ABQ somewhere, and our mutual friend Walter HB9 AGA AGA has had it now for the last 32 years. I keep asking for him back, and he says, "Oh, it's in my attic somewhere." I got to talk to Walter again. You're welcome to use it. And Jeff, you and I go back. I mean, we just before we really close off, we go back so long. I think the first time was I at Minneapolis, or was it? It was one of the ANARC.
You were there. You
the
were
Association there. Of North American Radio Club meetings.
You were there in 1979 at the ANARC convention in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I think you were there at the one in the previous year in 78 in Montreal, Canada.
That I remember, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So our association goes back at least until 1978.
Do you want to talk about Radio Earth?
Well, then,
goes back even, yeah, it's just about that time.
Yeah, yeah, in the early 1980s.
Very quickly, what was Radio Earth?
Well, Radio Earth was a commercial shortwave broadcast service which operated out of studios first in Curacao, Netherlands Antilles, then in Miami, in Chicago, in the Dominican Republic, and transmitting from stations in Radio Clarín in the Dominican Republic, from WRNO in New Orleans, from WHRI in Indiana, from Radio Milano International, you remember?
I negotiated that for you. I went down to Milan and talked to Angelo Bora, who was the pioneer private broadcaster in Italy. I saw the station. As we say back in New York and in Chicago, we schmoozed a little bit there and came up with a deal. And you were operating through Milan for quite some time. I think that really cemented our relationship for good.
Yeah, it was. It's unfortunate Radio Earth didn't last any longer. It was around a very few years, but it got the ball rolling in many respects, and certainly got my ball rolling. and convinced me to stay involved in other aspects of shortwave until now.
Well, I always wanted to have my own hobby international broadcasting station, a shortwave broadcasting station that became IRRS, the Italian Radio Relay Service, we can say now. Nexus International Broadcasting Association, which came later. And I guess you realized your dream in WRMI.
Yeah, and it was a long time coming, and it hasn't been easy. Shortwave broadcasting is not the most lucrative business in the world, but I can't think of anything else that I'd really rather do. It's fun and interesting, entertaining, educational, and
very stressing.
Very stressing, but hey, if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have met guys like you. So,
Jeff, it's a great pleasure to have you here in the Emmental, and welcome to our QTH here, our location. Nice to welcome you back after so many years. Bob, the same goes for you. You and I talk on Skype, we talk on the telephone, we talk on ham radio, and it's nice to see you here. And as we're talking, I got an antenna project which you've helped me out with materially, a W3DZZ trap dipole for 80 and 40 meters, the ham bands. You recommended that. And you've always given me very good and solid technical advice over the years. And you were kind enough to even supply a coaxial antenna switch, which I need for the project. So I don't want to swear, but I'm going to really try hard to get that. I've got the antenna. I ordered it from Germany a year ago. It's been in the box in the shack downstairs ever since. And the first thing you did when you came up here was to look and see if the antenna was up. And it wasn't up yet.
And I will certainly come up when you have the W3DZZ installed, Bob.
And you can talk on the station and use it.
Talk on the station with a solid working beam.
And a 600-watt linear.
600 watt to me. Well, and of course, Jeff, you've seen the location Bob has here. It's small wonder that he gets through to the United States.
Yeah, pretty amazing place here. I wish you the best of luck, Bob, with your replacing your beam, and hope the new one lasts you another 40 years.
Okay, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, and I really hate to sign off because it's been so much fun, and I'm sure that we could continue on this for hours. But, Jeff, you're going to be leaving to go back to Zurich and then to the States tomorrow, and we asked you, what would you like to have for dinner? And you said a cheese fondue. So that's what we're going to have. Unfortunately, Bob, you can't join us. I know your wife, Evelyn, is not well at the moment, and you want to get back and look after her. It's a pity we can't continue this discussion over a cozy fondue and a glass of white wine. But in any case, thank you very much for coming up. It's good to see you again, as always. And for everybody who asks, Bob is in good health. He's doing well. He's full of life. And we just heard he's ready to get that antenna back up or a replacement and keep plugging away at HF. Bob, you have the honors to close out this special broadcast of the two Bobs over Switzerland and Sound.
A special broadcast indeed it was. And from the garden, open garden party, QSO and interview, having our guest Jeff White. So until we meet again, this is just truly Bob Tommen and
Bob Zanotti and
Jeff White
saying goodbye,
good DXing,
and the very best of 73s.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs. SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.